and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Pam Colleen, and we're going to talk about her book, Addiction, The Hidden Epidemic. And I want to say beforehand that neither Pam nor I are physicians, and we're neither diagnosing nor attempting to treat you. We're providing you with information that you can use to change your life and cure. You heard me, cure your addiction. So thanks for coming on, Pam. And before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Well, thank you so much for having me, Eva. And first of all, I'd like to basically just share my story as to how and why I ended up writing this book. And in a nutshell, basically, it's because I struggled for 12 years with chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and multiple chemical sensitivities. So basically, I was in a really, really bad mood for about 12 years of my life, where I went from growing up doing really, really well at school and staying very active, working and thriving very nicely, and then all of a sudden I collapsed and I really couldn't function. I couldn't even read books because my brain was in such a fog that I couldn't remember what I was even reading. Even if I read a sentence 1, 2, 3, 4 times, I still couldn't remember what I was reading. So my brain basically was very, very broken, if you will. And so when I first became ill, I just started trying all sorts of different natural health remedies because I knew almost instantly that I wouldn't find any help in the medical community. I tried that route, and it failed abysmally, so I knew that there was something more that I needed to do. So back over 20 years ago now, I started experimenting with different diets and, the acid and alkaline thing and the macrobiotic thing and the vegetarian diet. And then I tried all sorts of supplements that tried and failed. And so ultimately, of course, it gets very, very frustrating and very, very expensive in the end. And so essentially when I finally... Basically, I mean, I was on death's door. I was so incredibly sick, and I finally was able to connect some dots when I understood the importance of eating 3 square meals a day and returning to the way we used to eat before a lot of the food phobias surfaced after the Second World War, for example. So I had to get over my fear of animal fat and cholesterol so that I could then basically start repairing my brain and my nervous system overall. And that's one of the missing links that I see in the natural health community, is that people simply do not understand the importance of eating animal fat and cholesterol. And so that's basically what led me up to writing my book, because I said, I'm not the only one out there who is struggling with fatigue and brain fog and mood disorders and so on.
Well, let me just ask you this. Before we get into the meat of what we're doing, cholesterol is a big word. It sends people running. It sends doctors prescribing. So why do we not need to fear cholesterol? What is it?
Because
what does it really do for us?
Mm-hmm. Well, cholesterol is a very, very crucial nutrient, and it's really, really important in terms of your brain function. It's basically the glue that holds your cell membrane together. It's a precursor to your hormones, for example. You need dietary cholesterol to form bile. So without dietary cholesterol, unfortunately, digestion can go awry. So it's a very, very crucial nutrient, and it's been wrongly demonized since about the 1950s. Where a very obscure scientist by the name of Dr. Ansel Keys came up with a theory that it was animal fat and cholesterol that was causing heart disease. And since at that time heart disease was relatively new and it was on the rise, scientists were actually scrambling around trying to find out what was causing this problem. And unfortunately what happened was is they took their eye off the target. Rather than blaming sugar, which was the real culprit at the time, they began to blame animal fat and cholesterol. And this has only been to our demise today. So because of this wrong information, we are physically and mentally much sicker today than we would have been if this theory had never come to light.
Oh, sure. It opened the pharmaceutical stores for them to make lots of drugs. Sorry,
well,
I couldn't resist that.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true, because you see in the 1970s, the low-fat lie became even more pervasive. In the 1970s, you start to see the rise of a lot of fad diets, you know, the weight loss centers. You start to see the rise of the low-fat dairy industry. And then in the 1980s is when you start to see more mood disorders begin to surface. And, of course, that's when I collapsed with chronic fatigue, was in the 1980s. So, and that's when they called it the yuppie flu. Do you remember that term?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
what are your credentials behind what you're talking about? You're a nutritionist, right?
I'm a nutritional consultant. So I basically, most of my credentials are that I learned a lot of what I know on my own, simply because of studying the work of Dr. Weston A. Price. So for the last over 10 years now, I've been studying the work of Dr. Weston A. Price, which basically emphasizes the importance of returning to traditional foods. But I do also have a certificate to do what is known as nutritional balancing, and that's a very, very intricate mineral balancing system that I use in order to help restore one's biochemistry. Because what I had to learn about what happened to me involved understanding how the body broke down in the first place, how my body broke down in the first place. And a lot of it, what it has to do with is the fact that our foundations basically are weaker now. So at the time I would have been growing up, of course, I was basically second generation of people on a very relatively low-fat diet, but also a diet that's very high in processed foods. So when I would have been even conceived in the womb, my biochemistry would have been very compromised. And then, of course, when I was born, raised as a child, of course, I was raised on a very, very high sugar diet, and then gradually moved towards a very, very low-fat diet, which made my biochemistry even weaker. So what I had to do to get my health back was I had to learn how to repair all of these wonderful systems that keep us intact, and that involves keeping your blood sugar regulated. That involves the adrenal function, it involves thyroid function, it involves basic your digestion, and it involves keeping your minerals in balance. So that entire system must work in concert so that the individual feels good, both mentally and physically. And of course, this has a lot to do with addiction, simply because the mood disorder usually, for most people, will precede the addiction.
So where can people find you, Pam?
Actually, my website is just my name, www.pamkillen.com. And if people
spell
want
that,
to...
Please. P-A-M-K-I-L-L-E-E-N.
K-I-L-L-E-E-N. Yeah, pamkillen.com.
Okay. So where does one start?
Well, it's...
You've got to start somewhere. Where is that?
Yeah, if anybody's going to start at the very basic level, it's to start increasing their consumption of animal fats in their diet. People must return to eating 3 square meals a day. So we must get over our egg phobia, meat phobia, butter phobia, cholesterol phobia. We have to return to the foods that are known to be the most nutrient-dense foods that we can possibly eat. And we have to prepare our meals from scratch. And we know that this, when we follow this paradigm, we know that this is what kept us healthy. Before World War II, we ate 3 square meals a day. We didn't have a meat phobia. We weren't afraid of eating eggs or butter. And back then, we were much healthier than we are now. So we don't need to follow fad diets. The truth is in front of us. And it's just very, very simple. The truth is always very simple. It's man that makes things very, very complicated, of course. So,
and would you say that we do not need to include as many grain products and like flour, sugar, rice, and pasta products as we do today?
That's right. These are the foods that really got us into a lot of trouble in the first place. These essentially, if I create a rhyme around it, of course, it's wheat that replaced meat, and that began in the early 1900s. Even earlier, if you go back to the invention of the steel mill in the early 1800s, when they started consolidating the flour industry. So as we started consuming more and more plant-based foods, in other words, foods like wheat, that displaced the more nutrient-dense foods like meat. And that's where you start to see physical degeneration occur, is when we start to move out the more nutrient-dense foods from our diet, foods like meat, eggs, and butter. And around 1909, of course, things got really bad when they invented hydrogenation. And it was hydrogenation that gave rise to the margarine industry. And that's another thing that got us into a lot of trouble, because the hydrogenated fats, of course, not only are they very toxic to our system, but they displaced more nutrient-dense foods like butter.
You know, one time, and I'm not going to get stuck on this, but I have to say this. One time someone told me that margarine was so bad for you that flies wouldn't land on it if you leave it outside.
That's right.
And
you can do it.
And they won't. They
no,
won't,
you're
they
absolutely won't right, Eva.
On the margarine.
You could put a tub of margarine or spread and a tub of butter outside in your backyard, and the wildlife will not touch the spread or the margarine, but they will certainly enjoy the butter.
That's right. Now, I want to say this to my listening audience. One of the reasons that I wanted to have Pam Colleen on my show is, and everybody that here listens to my show on a regular basis knows that I have a daughter, a teenage daughter, that had something happened to her, and she started self-medicating with street drugs and developed a very serious drug problem and cutting problem. Well, I turned to Pam Colleen. Burton Goldberg suggested that I call Pam, and not only did Pam help me, but she saved my daughter's life. And my daughter is not using drugs today, and this was only like since last April. April will be a year. So my daughter's doing great today. She's not cutting. She's not using any drugs, and she's happy. And so I wanted to let you people know that curing addiction is really, really possible. And starting with the basis of the very basics of what Pam has to teach you will get you to that place. And the first place that Pam took us was, of course, the fat, the animal fat. But the second place she took us was to minerals, to being heavy metal toxic. So I'd like you to talk about that, specifically zinc and copper.
Yeah, so that is absolutely one of the missing pieces to the puzzle in the field of addiction, is the understanding of the balance between zinc and copper. With everybody I work with, copper toxicity is an issue. I have yet to see anyone who doesn't have a copper toxicity problem. And, of course, when copper becomes toxic in the body, this also will compromise zinc levels. And I think one of the greatest unknown variables out there in the natural health world is understanding the delicate balance of minerals and how that plays upon your nervous system and your mood. And what people need to understand, I think, the most is that your minerals are your spark plugs. They're what gives you your spark. They're what absolutely are necessary for certain enzymes to react in your body, for your body to be able to have good digestion, for your body to be able to create neurotransmitters in your brain. Your minerals must be in balance in order for so many different things to work in your body. And when the minerals go awry, of course, that's when you start to feel off. And to balance your minerals isn't as simple as saying, I'm going to guess which minerals I need. I'm going to just assume I have copper toxicity, and to offset the copper toxicity, I'm simply going to take some zinc. Well, what ends up happening when people are guessing which minerals they need, they end up actually making themselves much sicker, because they end up causing more imbalances. And so what I do is I have a very intricate mineral balancing system that I use, but just by simply testing the hair. And this isn't just a regular hair mineral analysis. This is a very unique lab that I use, and it was based upon the work of a biochemist who basically compared the biochemistry of sick people against the biochemistry of healthy people. So what he did was he would study the biochemistry of a sick person, and then he would say, how do I get the biochemistry of the sick person so that it looks like the profile or the biochemistry of the healthy person? He was an absolute genius. And what he did was He did all the hard work. He figured out exactly how to push and pull the minerals of the sick person so that they would eventually gravitate to the same profile of the biochemistry of a healthy person. And this is a very intricate science, as a matter of fact. It's not guesswork. When I can look at the hair analysis and I can see the basic biochemistry of somebody who's not feeling very well, who has depression, who has anxiety, who has chronic fatigue, who has addiction issues, whatever label that they have, however terrible they may feel, and I look at their biochemistry, we know from their basic biochemistry, we know which minerals, we know which supplements that they need in order to push their profile towards a healthy profile. Now, this it all sounds well and good, but this takes a lot of work, but most importantly, it takes patience. Because the biochemistry is not going to come back overnight. It's not going to be fixed in 3 months. It's not going to be fixed in 6 months. To fix the biochemistry requires a tremendous amount of work and a tremendous amount of patience. So for most people, it takes about a year before the biochemistry comes back. And that's with a lot of hard work. The good news is, within 3 months, when I have people on the full program, when they're doing the saunas, when they're doing the diet, when they're doing the supplements, and even coffee enemas are a part of the program. When they're doing the entire program, usually within 3 months, they feel dramatically better. Now, within that, especially the first 3 month profile, is when they're also going to be detoxing quite a bit. And by detoxing, I mean as the minerals start to improve both the levels and the ratios, then now toxins can come out of the body and nutrients can finally get into the cell as well. So when that starts to happen, people can feel rather lousy. So they can have headaches, they can have nausea, they can have skin rashes. Whatever symptoms they may have had before starting the program, they can actually get worse in the beginning simply because of the detox reaction. So people need to be prepared for that to happen. And they need to stay dedicated to the entire program so that they will minimize the chances of the detox from happening in the first place.
If you don't mind, I want to talk just a minute about what happened with Jessica. Because mm-hmm. I'm on a crusade to let people know that they can be cured, that it's mm-hmm. not AA, going to an AA meeting every week saying, my name's whatever it is, and I'm a this or I'm a that. There really is hope. But it was hard, and Jessica's a teenager, and she didn't always do things exactly like Pam said to do, because there was a lot. I just want to be honest here. We did have to resort to using some amino acids one time because Jess got in a very acute phase. But when Jessica listened to her and did the diet and did the coffee enemas, which I want you to talk to them about that. Mm-hmm. What is a coffee enema, and why do they need to do that to treat addiction? Mm-hmm. And when she would do saunas, which she never did, but either way, so you will have hard times, but there is hope, and that this really does work. It just takes a little while.
Yeah. No, I love what I do because I get to see people get well. And it is a tremendous amount of work to do the program that I have. So people need to be mentally and physically prepared, and they need to have a lot of family support as well, because it's hard to do this program alone, especially if you're not feeling well mentally. So the coffee enema is, when people start doing the coffee enemas, they always say, "Oh, I can't believe I wasn't doing this before. This is amazing. I feel so much better." And the reason why is because what the coffee is doing is it's actually increasing your body's production of bile. And the heavy metals, for them to take their exit route, they must come out through the bile. That's one of their exit routes. And for most people today, because we've been following a low-fat diet, our bile production is very, very compromised. And at that, the bile ducts can be blocked with a lot of gallstones. So the bile may not even descend into the small intestine to do its job. So for many, many people, what must happen is they must stimulate the production of bile in order to allow for the heavy metals to leave the body. That's one reason for the coffee enemas. Another reason for the coffee enemas is because it helps increase the production of a very, very powerful detoxifying agent, and that's glutathione. So for detoxification to be smooth on this program so that it's not so harsh on you, the coffee enemas are very, very important, because when I put people on the supplements and we're using healthy minerals to push out the toxic metals, when we start to stir up those toxic metals, and if they don't have an exit route, if in other words, if the bile is not being produced properly and if people are not sweating through the saunas, then the heavy metals will stay trapped in the body and cause more harm than good. So that's why it's so important to do both the saunas and the coffee enemas. And if people don't even work with me while they're trying to get well, I would still encourage them to do the saunas and the coffee enemas, simply because they just have so much value in terms of getting people well.
Now, but when you do the coffee enemas, let's make it clear. It's important to use caffeinated organic, right?
Yeah, just a regular organic coffee is fine to use.
And the caffeine's important. I mean, because some people say, oh, I can't have any caffeine, so they use their decaffeinated coffee to make their enema. Is that important?
Yeah, you need to basically use a regular coffee, make sure there's some caffeine in there. And there are some other chemicals that are used that are in the coffee that are important in terms of
okay.
stimulating the bile production as well. And these, of course, have long and complicated names to them.
I'd like to go back to the zinc and copper just for a moment. Zinc is a calming mineral. Many people don't know that. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand how they can get too much copper. I'd like for you to talk about how we can do that, like copper bracelets and copper plumbing, because people don't realize where they're getting this stuff.
Copper is a very ubiquitous metal. It's one that we need in our bodies. Copper is essential, but we don't want to get too much of it in our bodies. Just like any mineral out there, you've got to be careful. It's all about balance, right? And because copper is so ubiquitous, of course, we are running into so much trouble today by over-accumulating copper. And why that is today is there's a few reasons why. Number one is because in city water system, in municipal water supplies, of course, they add copper sulfate in there as an antifungal. And swimming pools as well tends to have a lot of copper. So if you happen to be a swimmer, there's a possibility of collecting too much copper just because of swimming. Another reason why is because, of course, copper pipes. And I think one of the most prevalent reasons why we become copper toxic is because we're not eating enough red meat in our diets today, because we are so meat phobic. And so because people, especially vegans and vegetarians, are staying away from red meat, these are the high risk groups. And that's why you see vegetarians and vegans with a lot of mood disorders. You see that they generally tend to be very angry people. They tend to be very exhausted, fatigued, depressed. They tend to have a lot of sleep disorders. They have a lot of mood issues, the vegetarians and especially the vegans, and it's because of this copper toxicity problem. But this is going to happen with people who are near vegetarians, even, because there's a lot of near vegetarians out there, and they're not eating enough red meat. And of course, if you're eating a lot of oysters, you might be getting enough zinc, but I don't know anybody today, Eva, who's eating enough oysters. So the next best source of zinc is going to be red meat. And very few people I know, I mean, when I go out for lunch with my friends, I'm the only one eating a steak.
So let me ask you this. Many people are going to listen to this now and run down to Walmart and buy a zinc supplement. Why is it important that we don't do that?
Because if you take zinc just like without knowing your basic biochemistry, you could make yourself a lot sicker. And one of the reasons why, and this gets very, very complicated, Eva, but if you don't know what your sodium and potassium ratio is, if your sodium and potassium ratio is high, then you can handle some zinc. If your sodium and potassium ratio is low, then zinc is only going to make you sicker. So I know who needs zinc in their protocol just by looking at their biochemistry, and that's where I can see their sodium and potassium levels. And what sodium and potassium is a reflection of is how well the adrenals are functioning. And so when adrenals become weak, you have to remember this is another very, very key reason why our minerals are out of balance, is because our adrenals are so incredibly weak today. And when that happens and your minerals can't stay in balance, then the other thing that will happen, of course, is that the adrenals can't kick out the heavy metals. And so they stay trapped in the body and cause this incredible vicious cycle. And that's essentially what addiction is because the adrenals are so weak, the heavy metals stay trapped, and then you turn to an addiction in order to stimulate your adrenals short term. So the adrenals turn on for a little while. They'll kick out some of the heavy metals, in particular copper. You feel better for a little while, but you've weakened the adrenal glands by overstimulating them. So the next day, you have to go back to the addiction. Now, that addiction might be sugar, it might be cocaine, it might be caffeine, it might be jogging, for all that I know, or high-intensity exercise. So there's a lot of exercise addicts out there, and that's very damaging to the adrenal glands. So,
Sorry, go ahead.
No, so your adrenals are like your batteries, right? And they will wear out if you overuse them.
One thing I was looking for you to say is the quality of the mineral you're putting in your body.
Yeah, the amino acid chelates are the ones that you, if you are going to take any kind of mineral, it should be an amino acid chelate.
Yeah, because, you know, you go down to buy some to Walmart or wherever it is that you get it, and you're getting a very cheap thing that also has many other metals in it as fillers, and people don't know about that, so I just kind of wanted you to mention that, if you would.
Right,
if that makes sense.
It makes sense, and then the other thing is these mineral blends. Of course, the minerals are usually not in the correct balance, so they will also cause a lot of problems. And again, when somebody goes out and takes copper, a lot of people are taking zinc and copper together potentially, and that is also a recipe for disaster for a lot of people because without knowing your baseline biochemistry, it's impossible to know whether or not you need zinc and copper. And if you don't need copper and copper is in your supplement, even a multivitamin, it can make you a lot sicker.
Is there a correlation between methylation problems and heavy metal toxicity?
Yes, because
because some of the listeners may not know that.
Well, methylation is involved basically in terms of the production of your neurotransmitters in your brain. And if you have too many heavy metals in your brain, of course, that's just going to interfere with your body's production of neurotransmitters. It's going to interfere with the methylation process. And so this is something, again, when people have brain fog, when people have cognitive issues, when they have poor memory, generally they do have some sort of feeling like their brain is just not running on all eight cylinders. And when the metals come out, the clarity people get is absolutely incredible. So it's a cause and effect. What I get to see on a daily basis is a cause and effect phenomenon that's going on with my clients. When I start working with them, they have this horrible feeling in their brain, typically, and they usually call it brain fog. And then usually within 2-3 months, maybe a little bit longer, it depends on the individual, that brain fog clears up, and they start to feel lighter. Their memory starts to improve, their sleep starts to improve, any cravings that they have start to, you know, be reduced and so on. So they start to feel this wonderful sense of clarity, inner peace, and calm. And that is basically just a reflection that the brain is starting to function properly, and that's because the heavy metals have got to move out. And when those heavy metals, I mentioned earlier, Eva, about detox, when those heavy metals start to move, people can generally start to feel a lot of headaches while this is happening as well. So if you are one with a lot of headaches, that's oftentimes a sign of this heavy metal accumulation in the brain.
So another thing I'd like for you to talk about, because we only got about 25 more minutes thereabout, is gut. Mm-hmm. And, there was one more thing. We'll talk about gut, and I'll remember the other things just a minute.
Oh, it'll come.
Gut is very important.
Yeah, because your gut is your second brain. And so what ends up happening with people
is... Why is that? People don't know that. Don't assume people know things.
People say you have a gut feeling or you have butterfly feeling in your gut, and that's oftentimes related to emotional stuff, whether good or bad. So your gut is indeed your second brain. And one reason why is because when the gut starts to over-accumulate too many toxins, if you have poor digestion, if there's things that are rotting in your gut rather than properly digesting in your gut, then the byproducts from that putrefaction, if you will, actually can permeate through your entire body and affect your brain, and they will cross your blood-brain barrier. So it makes these toxins that are forming in your gut can actually make you feel poisoned, and that's how I felt when I had chronic fatigue. I felt like I was poisoned about 24/7. I had a taste in my mouth where I felt poisoned. My nostrils, were burning. Like it's like I felt like I had some sort of toxin coming out through my nose. And of course, I had terrible and debilitating brain fog when I had chronic fatigue. Like I felt like my brain was poisoned. And of course, I had terrible, terrible, terrible digestion. And so we must basically fix the digestion by regulating what is known as the gut flora. And what that means is you have to balance the good versus the bad. Let's just say the good bacteria versus the bad bacteria in the gut. And so generally, you're supposed to have about 80% good and 20% bad in your gut. And when people get sick, unfortunately, I think it basically probably goes the other direction, where it's probably more like 80% bad and 20% good. And so you have to force the gut to come back into its regular balance. And to do that, of course, it's very important to eat foods like raw sauerkraut, lacto-fermented dairy products like kefir and yogurt, and even possibly to take probiotics, friendly bacteria in the form of capsules, for example, that you can take to start encouraging the good bacteria to start growing in the gut. And this, Eva, this can take a lot of time. You have to be very patient. You have to be very, very compliant, because other things also in the diet must take place, like avoiding things like sugar and processed foods, because these are the foods that encourage the growth, of course, of the bad bacteria. So it takes a tremendous amount of discipline and patience in order to regulate the gut ecology. Because what you can have happen, actually, is called auto-brewery syndrome. So you can actually have your own distillery, basically, down in your gut, producing very, very toxic chemicals like acetaldehyde. And this is one of the most toxic chemicals you can have growing in your gut. And acetaldehyde can and does influence even brain function, but it will also interfere with your hormones and with your body's ability to use certain nutrients as well.
I know what the other topic was, and that was hypoglycemia. I don't know a soul, an adult, not to mention children, that doesn't have some hypoglycemic tendencies, that doesn't have some mood disorders.
That's right. That's one of the main themes in my book, is I talk about hypoglycemia and how it's just basically it's the precursor to addiction, because of the fact that, of course, why are we getting hypoglycemia? We're getting hypoglycemia because we're eating too many plant-based foods, and we're disregarding the importance of stabilizing our blood sugar by eating enough animal foods in our diet. And so in a nutshell, that's basically what I say in my book, is all of these plant-based foods are dysregulating our blood sugar and setting us up for hypoglycemia, and therefore setting us up for mood disorders, which would set us up for addiction.
Okay, assume that you're talking to, I live up in the country, in the mountains, and most of these people have not had an opportunity to go to college. Most of them are farmers. There is a lot of addiction up here because of marijuana and, quite frankly, meth.
Mm.
So we have there are a lot of people desperate for help. So explain to them in layman's terms why they don't have to be sitting in AA crying their eyes out, that there's something that they can do at home. And that hypoglycemia is one of the first things.
Mm-hmm.
It really is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Drink beer to alcohol to going to sleep and getting up, and beer and alcohol and going to sleep and getting up. Why is that?
Mm-hmm.
Explain why so they'll understand it.
Yeah. Well, when you talk about availability, of course, the more drugs we have available to us, the more chances that we're going to become addicted. But let's You know what? We've been exposed to drugs since the beginning of mankind. You know, whether it was mushrooms or marijuana or whatever the case may be, we have been exposed to drugs forever. What is different today is that not only are we exposed to more drugs, but we have a terrible epidemic of brain starvation. We have starved our brains of the proper nutrients to keep us feeling happy, healthy, whole, naturally. We should feel happy and focused all day long, every day, you know, 365 days of the year. We should not be feeling depressed. We can, of course, go through grieving periods when a loved one may die. That is normal. But what's going on today with chronic depression, acute depression, anxiety, and so on, fatigue, is that's just not normal. You know, Mother Nature did not mess up to create us, to create this bad mood epidemic that we have today. This is very, very new to mankind.
And this shakes
for me
to take it. You know,
I'm sorry?
It's, you know, let them understand that, you know, the shakes that they get, what is that thing?
Oh, the shakes is the, from the withdrawal or?
Yeah, and the drop in blood sugar. So they'll understand why they need to have this meat.
Mm-hmm, why they need to stabilize their blood sugar so the shakes will stop. And that's it, is the nervous system is just so fragile. And, of course, when they get the shakes, it's just a sign that they need some food. Then they need to have real food, not potato chips, not French fries, but a nice steak, a nice piece of chicken, some eggs, some high-fat cheese. Traditional foods is what stabilizes the nervous system. So the shakes basically is an indication that your nervous system is crying out for real food. And when you're eating the real food, that's what's going to stabilize your mood. It's not the drug that's going to stabilize your mood. It's food that is going to stabilize your mood. And the more we can stabilize our moods, the less likely we're going to gravitate to drugs. So to me, that's the real solution for this addiction epidemic that we have today. And I need people to understand that there is always hope and that they can overcome their addiction. But it does take work. It does take support. But they don't have to live in this brain fog. They don't have to live in this bad mood. That nature is not the one that screwed up here, and that this the addiction epidemic is not happening because people have a moral defect or personality flaw. I can't emphasize that enough. People, this is not a personality flaw. It is not a moral defect if you are struggling with addiction. This is something that is very, very physical, and it is very, very curable. It's just a matter of getting the correct information, and unfortunately, the circles that people are going to right now for the information do not have the information around the importance of food and mood. They are using talk therapy. They tend to only use talk therapy, and I have no problem with talk therapy. I think talk therapy is wonderful. But it's limited in terms of its effects because you can't talk somebody out of an addiction when they are a biochemical mess. The biochemistry must fix itself. It must be repaired so that then the talk therapy will work. But without addressing the biochemistry, talk therapy really is very, very limited. And this is shown in the results when people go for therapy, when they go to rehabilitation. Rehabilitation centers today, unfortunately, have about a 90% failure rate. And if they would introduce nutritional solutions in these therapy centers, then they'd be looking at more like an 80% cure rate.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I almost want to yell out. That's right. That's right. One thing I'd like for you to talk about is excitotoxin, neurotoxins. People don't, you know, everybody asks, when you go anywhere, you want pink or blue or yellow nowadays?
Yeah. Well, the you know, the aspartames and so on, all of these synthetic sugars are also addictive. But like you're mentioning, they're excitotoxins. So there's a risk in turning to these synthetic sugars in that one of the risks is, of course, that you can develop brain tumors from them because they overstimulate the brain, essentially, is what they're doing. So, you know, the key thing is to turn towards natural sugars if you're going to eat sugar at all. And if you have a sugar addiction, that needs
stevia,
to be addressed.
Like stevia, you mean?
You know, I'm still even not a fan of stevia. I know a lot of people are turning to stevia as a healthier alternative, but I just caution people against anything that's a fine white powder. My farmer grows her own stevia, and she uses the actual herb when she's baking.
Mm-hmm.
and it tastes wonderful, actually. But she's not; it's not a refined form of stevia, and that's the refining process.
I agree with you.
It makes me a little nervous, actually.
I love stevia. I used to liquid one though, but I do agree that anything that somebody's touching and changing the structure of it is potentially a problem.
I agree.
So now you've got about 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes, Pam. I'm going to let you talk about anything you want to talk about.
Well, let's look back in history. We're about 100 times more likely today to be depressed than we were 100 years ago. And I want people to think about what's happened to our food supply over the last 100 years. And let's just use some common sense here, because I know there's so much misinformation and basically keeping people from learning this very basic information. And I know it really blindsided me when I was a vegetarian, thinking, you know, eating all these fruits and vegetables was good for me, right? So I got blindsided. So I know what it feels like. It's a confusing world out there, and it's hard to tell the difference between what is healthy and what is not healthy. But 100 years ago, when we were physically and mentally healthier than we are today, most of us lived on farms, and we had our chickens outside, and we had our cows outside, and we drank raw milk, and we churned our own butter, and we ate pastured chicken and pastured eggs, and the general store was basically barren. If you think about Little House on the Prairie, Eva, if you think about that series, and you think about the scenes where Laura Ingalls may have been going into the general store was barren compared to what we see today in the grocery stores, right? They may have sold some fabric, they may have sold some canned foods, they may have sold some sugar and some flour, but it was really basically, you know, there was hardly any food in the general store because people were producing their own foods. And they didn't overconsume plant-based foods. And we couldn't have, of course, because we didn't have greenhouses, we didn't have refrigerated trucks until the 1940s. Refrigerated trains we didn't have until the late 1800s, so we couldn't have eaten a lot of plant-based foods back in the 1800s, for example. So we were eating a lot of nutrient-dense foods. We were known as a nation of meat eaters. We were known as a nation that honored the tradition of eating 3 square meals a day. So we need to return to those basics in order to return to health. And you have to be very, very careful from any information that you might hear that takes you away from doing that. So in order for you, when you're hearing nutritional information, you need to ask yourself these basic questions in order to determine whether or not the nutritional information you're hearing is correct. So the first thing you must ask yourself when given a piece of nutritional information is you must ask yourself, does that prove that couples are fertile? Does it prove that babies are healthy? Does it prove that cultures can live without chronic disease or mental disorders? Does it prove that seniors are aging gracefully and that they're still productive members of society? So the only way to know whether the nutritional information you're getting is true is by examining societies that have been eating that way for many, many generations. And that's essentially the work that I teach. It's based on the work of Dr. Weston A. Price, and he wrote the book Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, which should have been called Nutrition and Physical and Mental Degeneration, because what Dr. Price did was he traveled all around the world looking at the characteristics of a healthy diet based on the health of a culture. And he compared the healthy cultures to the cultures that were close by that were eating modernized foods. So they were importing foods from, let's just say, the United States. So they were eating things like sugar, they were eating flour, bread, they were eating condensed milk, they were in canned foods. They were displacing, these foods were the displacing foods that pushed away their more traditional nutrient-dense foods. And when people had access to the modernized foods, that's when Dr. Price would see the disease start creeping in. And so he would start to see, number one, he would see tooth decay. He would see crooked teeth. And, of course, both crooked teeth and tooth decay, the cavities, are new to mankind. They only really just surfaced recently in human history. And they're really just a reflection.
That.
Pardon me?
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, when you go back before the invention of agriculture, even 10,000 years ago. Pre-agriculture, the archaeologists, when they look at the skulls of humans, they always had straight teeth and never had cavities. And then when you fast forward to, just at the late 1800s, early 1900s, that's when you start to see more tooth decay, because that's when you start to see more processed foods enter our diets. So this notion that, for example, that we need fluoride in our city water, of course, is absolutely a joke, because fluoride, first of all, isn't even an essential nutrient, and cavities aren't caused. Pardon me?
It's a poison.
It's a poison, absolutely. But, I mean, it's not even, it's not, cavities aren't caused from a fluoride deficiency to begin with. They're caused because of eating processed foods, in particular sugar, of course. So, at any rate, so when Dr. Price studied the mouths of these primitive cultures, they didn't brush their teeth, they didn't floss their teeth, they didn't even have dentists, and they had perfect teeth. They were perfectly straight, and they tended to have absolutely no cavities. But when you study the cultures that were importing the modernized foods, that's when you start to see the oral health decline, and that's when you start to see the rise of things like cancer, tuberculosis, diabetes, and so on. In primitive cultures, of course, they were both physically and mentally healthy. He always, always described these primitive cultures as being extremely happy people. And by the way, this research started in and around the 1920s, before the modernized food industry got as big as it is today. It'd be almost impossible to do this research today.
I want to go back and say one more thing about the hypoglycemia. One thing that I've noticed in one of my friends who has bipolar problems, doesn't have an addiction really, but he does have bipolar issues, is my little boy picked it up, and every time he starts acting up, maybe about 20 minutes before the rage hits, my little boy will go, you need some food. I noticed my little boy would go through, when we would go looking for houses to buy a house in the mountains, we'd go through some fast food restaurant in the morning time to get a biscuit or something, and my little boy started ordering two more biscuits than he would eat, and I was wondering why he was doing that, and I thought, well, maybe he's going through a growing spell and needs extra food. But what he was doing, he realized, and he was only 10, he realized that when this person would go too long without food, he would go into rages.
Mm-hmm.
So he would order him an extra piece of chicken.
Good, good. Well, that's the
that
protein.
Biscuit.
Yeah, you need the protein and the fat for sure to stabilize.
So I want people to know, pay attention when you start getting that shaky, irritable feeling, and eat some food.
Right, because what's happening in that case, because the blood sugar dips and then the adrenaline starts to come up, right? So the adrenaline is basically compensating or trying to compensate for the low blood sugar, right? Because it's trying to send a signal to the body to release what is known as stored sugar or glycogen. And that, when you're releasing all that adrenaline, can make you really, really angry. So that's where you start to see, so these rages and violent tempers surface. And like you said, the shakiness.
So is there anything else, because I can start asking you questions again, we got about 7 or 8 minutes. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I mentioned in my book, a big section in my book is dedicated basically to our children today. And one of the reasons why I wrote my book wasn't just because of my experiences being very, very sick for so long, but because one of the doctors I interview in my book, Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride, was giving a seminar, and she said, we're turning our children into addicts. And when she said that, I almost fell out of my chair, because I said, she's right. We are. We're turning our children into addicts. And I said, I have to write a book about this, because when I look around at my generation, even a little bit younger than me, and I see how, this epidemic of chronic fatigue and depression and anxiety and sleep disorders, and then I look down even further and I see the children and I say, my goodness, even some of the numbers we're seeing today are saying that 25% of our children have a mood disorder. And that can't be normal. I know that that's not normal. When I talk to,
I bet it's more than that.
I think it probably is. I think it probably is. And of course, these mood disorders are not because of a Ritalin deficiency. These mood disorders are happening because the children are malnourished. And the other phenomenon that's going on, which really terrifies me, are these Red Bull drinks, these caffeinated pops, or these you know, like Red Bull. I don't know if you've seen them around, but the in between the Red Bulls and the popularity in drinking coffee, young children today are taking in way too much caffeine, not just sugar, but caffeine. And so these are very destabilizing. Caffeine is actually, by a scientist's term, caffeine is actually a gateway drug. So if kids are getting high on caffeine at a very young age, what are they going to need in their 20s? You know, what are they going to need in their 30s?
What those things are doing is they're, because people get so wired up, it's causing people to have sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it messes up their autonomic nervous system so bad because they're so wired that they can't sleep, and they develop sleep apnea, and then they have to do all that regimen that goes with that. People don't realize if you just put that thing down that it goes away.
That's right. And same thing with ADD, ADHD. Sometimes just pulling out these caffeinated beverages is enough to turn a child around. But, you know, again, it still comes down to returning to basic values and returning to the notion of eating 3 square meals a day. Learning to cook food from scratch today is actually a survival skill. And those skills were taken from us after World War II, and it was done through very clever marketing, very deceitful marketing, when after World War II and the soldiers had had their, you know, all those prepared meals that they would take out into the field with them to keep them alive while they were in combat for 2 weeks, these meals ready to eat. These were the technologies that developed the wartime, these wartime foods. After World War II, the shareholders still wanted to make money on these new technologies. And so what they did was they turned all these technologies onto the average consumer and created all of these newfangled foods to line the middle aisles of a grocery store, essentially. And so when these newfangled foods hit the grocery store shelves post-World War II, women who bought these foods, when they were surveyed, they admitted that buying these foods made them feel shame and made them feel guilt. And so the food industry was in big trouble because they had shareholders to please. So what they ended up doing was they literally financially influenced all the food writers in the newspapers and the magazines at the time, and then they created advertising and articles that slanted towards telling women that cooking food from scratch was beneath them, and that basically that they became more glamorous and better housewives if they were to buy these newfangled foods. So women, unfortunately, bought into that at the time. And so when you start to see this transition in the 50s and 60s, more and more women started buying all of these newfangled foods and stopped buying the traditional foods and cooking food from scratch. So not all women, of course, but a lot of women did. And so that's when my generation came up, of course, and we were basically, I know when I look back at my childhood, I was brain starved as a child because I didn't get a lot of nutrient-dense foods in my diet growing up. I got a lot of canned foods, a lot of boxed foods, a lot of frozen foods, not a lot of foods made from scratch. And today when I talk to people, they don't even know how to cook food from scratch. And this is really one of the most dangerous things, I think, that is facing society today, because people just don't understand the importance of home-cooked meals.
Well, there's two things that we've got about 5 minutes. There's two things we have not mentioned that I think is important that we do mention. It's today doctors are telling heart patients, you know, cut the salt, which I agree with. Table salt is not a good thing for you. But when you cut your table salt, you're missing something, and you know what that is. And also cod liver oil or fish
right.
oil.
Oh.
Talk about those two things briefly, if you would.
Yeah, one of my favorite supplements is cod liver oil, and it's because it's got the what are known as the fat-soluble vitamins that are very crucial for your adrenal glands and basically for your overall nervous system as well. Also, cod liver oil is going to have some cholesterol in it, which is obviously very, very good for your brain. So cod liver oil is one of my favorite supplements, but also you must get enough salt in your diet, and hopefully it's an unrefined sea salt. Usually these salts are either pink or gray in color, and make sure you're getting at least a teaspoon, if not about a teaspoon and a half of salt in your diet a day. And one of the reasons why is that because the salt is very stabilizing for your adrenal glands. It's very, very calming to your adrenal glands. And it's actually salt is a natural antidepressant, It's also a natural hypnotic. So if you take a little bit of salt before you go to bed, if you have trouble sleeping, salt can actually help you fall asleep. And if you're having trouble staying asleep, take a little bit of salt if you wake up during the night. And sometimes that's good. That will help some people fall back asleep again. It really depends on the biochemistry, but for some people, salt can be very, very helpful from that regard.
And don't forget about the iodine. Where are people getting their iodine? Because salt's ionized, you know. And if they stop doing it, where are they getting it?
Yeah,
forget about that.
Yeah, one good way to get the iodine is through kelp. It's probably one of the most cost-effective supplements that you can take, and you'll know that it's standardized, so it will have some iodine in there. If you buy seaweed, unfortunately, there's no guarantee there's going to be iodine in it. And taking concentrated iodine in the form of like Lugol's or something along that line, sometimes that's just overkill for a lot of people. That's just way too much iodine for some people who are very, very sensitive. So really, to err on the side of caution, it's probably best just to take kelp on a daily basis and to take it in the form of, say, a capsule. And that way you'll get your iodine that way.
Okay. Tell us again where to find you, Pam.
Yeah, my website is www.pamkilleen.com, and Killeen is K-I-L-L-E-E-N. And my book, Addiction, The Hidden Epidemic, can be found at Amazon, Amazon.com, and I think even BarnesandNoble.com still has it as well.
And if you would mention the Alliance.
Oh, yes. Yes, the Alliance for Addiction Solutions is a group that I feature in my book, and I have a collection of interviews of some wonderful people like Julia Ross and Dr. Charles Gant and Stan Stokes and all of these people who are on the Alliance for Addiction Solutions who are really basically blazing the trail in terms of using nutritional solutions in the area of addiction. And I can't say enough good about these people and this group simply because I think basically even to date, right, Eva, they're the only group out there that's researching, exploring, and endorsing the idea of integrating nutritional solutions in the field of rehabilitation and addiction. So I really commend this group, and their hearts are in the right place. There's no question about that. And they're dedicated to this field, and I know that they're going to be the ones who are going to basically blaze the trail to basically get the good word out about this marriage that needs to take place in between nutrition,
yes,
and talk therapy.
And their website, it's I think it's Alliance for Addiction Solutions.org.
We have a monthly
mm-hmm. teleseminar where we have somebody that's cutting the trail for you to give a lecture every month. That's in like an hour and a half long, and then you get 30 minutes to answer questions. It's mostly therapists and physicians who are treating addiction and mood disorders, but you do not have to be a treatment provider to join this group of people. It's only $100 a month. Please, if you have an addiction or a mood disorder in your family, do yourself a favor. Go look at this website, join this group, and listen to our teleseminars every month.
I think it's $100 a year as a membership, isn't it?
Did I say $100 a month?
A month by accident,
I'm so sorry. No, it's $100 a year. Sorry about that. Thank you for fixing that. And we have great speakers. You get to ask questions. In fact, that's how I got on the path of saving my daughter's life.
Mm-hmm.
I joined that group, went to them and heard some speakers, got connected up with some people, and now I belong and am active, and it's the best thing, one of the best things I ever did.
Yeah, we need a central resource page in order to brainstorm and compile and learn from each other and basically, you know, have a database essentially for knowing who's really, really on top of this whole program where they're integrating nutrition.
Somebody mm-hmm. to ask questions to, you know,
mm-hmm.
somebody to help you. Okay,
exactly.
Pam, thank you so much for coming on. You're doing great work, and I personally am very grateful for you.
Oh, well, you're doing great work too, Eva. And send my love to Jess, and, you know, keep in touch, please. And if anybody has any questions, just feel free to email me at pam@pamkilleen.com.
Or if you have questions, you can email me if you forget, and I'll send it to her.
Wonderful. That sounds great. So
thank you.
I look forward to talking to you again soon, Eva. You
All
take
right.
care.
Take care,
okay.
dear. Good night.
Bye-bye.